This is Fresh Air. Tim Burton directed the film extravaganza Batman, but his first two films were smaller, idiosyncratic fantasies, Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Beetlejuice. He returned to a smaller scale in his latest film, Edward Scissorhands, which just came out on video. The movie is set in a generic suburb. Well, maybe not exactly generic. The road at the end of this suburb leads up a steep hill to a Gothic castle. As the movie opens, Diane Wiest is an Avon lady who's having no luck selling her cosmetics door to door. So she drives up the hill to the castle and finds there a young man with wild hair and a sensitive, innocent face who has scissors instead of hands. Edward Scissorhands isn't really human. He was created by an inventor, played by Vincent Price, who used to live in the castle. But the inventor died just before he was going to give his creation hands. The Avon lady takes isolated Edward Scissorhands home to the suburbs. This movie takes the form of a fairy tale. Tim Burton grew up loving monster movies and horror films. I asked him why he created a fairy tale.
Well, I'd always liked the idea of fairy tales. I always liked the imagery and fairy tales, myths, fables, things like Hansel and Gretel and Little Red Riding Hood. Even though I liked the imagery, they never really connected with me completely. And I just always had the desire to, you know, make a fairy tale that was, that had all of the, you know, elements, the visual quality of a fairy tale, but, you know, something that maybe would connect a little bit more.
Connect more by being more alienated.
Well, connect more in the sense that, you know, these things, fairy tales always have this wild sort of very visual imagery, and yet you know there's some sort of psychology beneath it, but yet I always had trouble understanding it. That's why I always liked that Bruno Bettelheim book, because it really, explained and opened up what fairy tales are and what they mean.
When and how did you get the image of Edward as a lonely boy, you know, who'd been created in a laboratory with scissors for hands? What came to you first about that, and what was behind the image?
Well, the image sort of came at the time, I think I was in my late teens or early 20s, and, you know, that time is always very dramatic, you know, mm-hmm. very melodramatic time of life. And I think it came from a feeling of not feeling like I was connecting with anybody. I mean, it's a fairly universal feeling. I didn't see myself as the only person like this. You know, everybody around me seemed to have varying degrees of the same kind of feeling. So even though, you know, I was still a student, I wasn't doing films or anything, I did like to draw. So it did have graphic implications. It didn't have any filmic at the time.
What's interesting to me that as someone who liked to draw, you had this image of a boy who had scissors for hands, who couldn't use his hands in the way that normal people could, whereas for you, your hands were part of your gift.
Well, yeah, hands, yeah, it's always, it's funny, you know, you start thinking about things, and I don't know, I start to kind of zone out on things, and I start thinking about hands, and then it starts to get, I remember when I saw this movie, I remember going to a drive-in and seeing Fantastic Voyage. I don't remember that, where they shrink down inside to somebody's body.
Yeah.
And it started to freak me out because I just started to think too much about the inside of my body. So the same thing happened with hands. I just started to think a bit too much about it and had to stop. But it had less to do with hands than it did to do with a feeling of not being able to communicate, you know. Again, since I was always fairly quiet and liked to draw, I would communicate pretty much just by drawings and not by speaking.
Can you describe how the hands for Edward were created?
Well, we wanted to do something that didn't rely heavily on special effects. You know, the most obvious technique would have been to have them mechanical and have like about four guys with cables running them. And since we just wanted to make this a simpler story and not make it so special effects heavy, the person I had do it, Stan Winston, who's great, who's a real good effects guy, designed it with the utmost simplicity in mind, so that the actor could just slip them on and know how it felt to feel that way. I mean, that was the most important thing to me, is that Johnny Depp could put them on and feel it and see what it felt like to have this kind of have these kind of hands. And since he's in every shot, it just made it much simpler. I mean, we'd still be shooting today, I think, if we hadn't done that.
How sharp were the blades on the scissors? And were there any accidents on the set?
Sure. Little pokes, and yeah, I got poked several times. I mean, they weren't real dangerous, but they were as dangerous as he was, you know, you know, even though they were made of a light light metal thing, it wasn't. They were still. I got poked a few times.
So were they sharp?
Yeah. I mean, not razor sharp. I mean, I couldn't. I mean. He wasn't giving the crew haircuts and everything, every, you know, 5 minutes between breaks or anything. But they were pretty sharp.
Now, one of the choices you made is really an homage. You have Vincent Price playing the role of the scientist in the castle who creates Edward Scissorhands. Were you a big fan of Vincent Price's movies when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. He, you know, those were the movies that really sort of shaped me and helped me. They were just all those Edgar Allan Poe movies that I just could relate to completely. This just, you know, again, they're like fairy tales. They're abstract, you know, there's something about them that you can relate to, and yet it's, you know, it's certainly nothing literal because, I mean, here's people being buried alive and houses crumbling and caving in, that sort of thing, and people coming back to life. You know, that's not certainly something literal, but there was a very strong feeling, a very strong thing, like that kind of connection you can have with a fairy tale that I had with those movies. And, you know, and the first thing I ever did, a short film called Vincent, which was sort of something about him, he narrated, and so it was the first great experience I had in movies too, so it was he's really been great.
Was Vincent one of the shorts you made for Disney when you were working
there?
What was it like for you working for the Disney studios? You started as an animator, and I guess it was when you got out of school you started to work for Disney for a few years. Did you feel that you fit into their sensibility? They have a much more upbeat sensibility than you do.
First year I was an animator's assistant and working on The Fox and the Hound, and it just drove me crazy because, number one, I wasn't really good at it, at that sort of thing. And there, you're really called upon to be the total artist and then the total factory worker at the same time. And I just couldn't make those two sides of my brain connect. It just drove me crazy. So I was very lucky. They let me sort of move on to just doing design work and my own things. And it was really nice of them to do. I mean, they didn't. It's kind of unusual circumstance that they let me do that.
What kind of criticisms would they give you?
You mean on my animation?
Yeah, or on your attitude?
Well, luckily, at the time anyway, animators were seen as eccentric, so you could pretty much hang by your heels from the ceiling and nobody would say much. I mean, I used to spend a lot of time in a little closet just sitting there in the dark. Nobody said too much. That was actually the best thing about it. I mean, you really could act however you want and not get into too much trouble.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. And my guest is director Tim Burton, and he made the new movie Edward Scissorhands. He also directed Batman, Beetlejuice, and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. This is Fresh Air. Director Tim Burton is my guest. Do you know why you were asked to direct Batman? You hadn't ever done a big blockbuster before, and this was one of the most hyped and promoted films, I think, in the history of movie making. Were you surprised that you were offered the movie on the basis of Beetlejuice and Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
No, because I had a relationship with Warners, and they knew me, and they knew. I think they felt comfortable with me. it doesn't. With any kind of movie, and especially one with big budgets, I mean, you know, it's always going to be a gamble. It's no matter who you have. And so, and that's right. And so I was glad that they just, they were always very supportive of me in that way. And I they should have been, because I think, you know, once you make the decision to let somebody do something, you better just, you know, let them do it, because That's the way it has to happen. So I think they just felt comfortable because I'd done two movies for them and basically, you know, had the take on Batman. Batman had been around for like 10 years and with lots of different people attached to it and I guess lots of different takes on how to do the movie. And I guess they just liked the take that we had on it too. So all of those things combined just, you know, wasn't a problem.
What was the take that you brought to the movie?
Well, you know, there was always the TV show versus the new comic, which was very hardcore and violent and stuff. And I had, you know, I was not a big comic fan, and I basically grew up watching the TV show. And I always felt more like a normal person when it came to Batman because I wasn't a comic book fan. I liked the TV show, and yet I loved the images of the characters. So I was a real Batman fan. I felt more like a normal, you know, because the factions between, you know, comic book people that are very, very passionate about comics and all hate the TV series, and then most people just know the TV series. The take that we had was somewhere in the middle. It's like to make it big and dark and sort of moody, but not completely cut out the humor, you know, keep it, because that's always been important to me in that, and just to you know, and the Joker was certainly a good avenue for that. So it was, you know, it was the idea to keep it big and dark and dramatic, yet not lose any of the, still have some humor in it.
I thought it was very interesting to cast Michael Keaton as Batman and Jack Nicholson as his nemesis, because there's something very similar, I think, about them facially and also about their acting styles. As a matter of fact, when I saw Michael Keaton in Clean and Sober, he really kept reminding me of Nicholson at his best.
Yeah. Well, they both have the same eyebrows.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. And maybe hairline also. Well, yeah, formerly, yeah, anyways, before.
They're both actors that just, again, it's my favorite kind of actor. They just do it. You know, they're just fun to watch, and they're fun to work with, and you know, it's just a kind of actor that I really enjoy.
Did you ever try to freak people out when you were young?
Oh, sure. Oh, we had a whole thing going. You know, we'd always prey upon the younger members of our neighborhood, and we faked a alien invasion in the park. You know, with creating a wreckage of a spaceship and footprints and stuff, and had convinced this kid that aliens had landed. I convinced the kids next door that I had murdered my brother. You know, horrible stuff.
Did your brother know about this?
Oh, yeah, no, he we had a fake fight, and I killed him.
Do you see this as the foreshadowing of your career in movies?
Well, yeah, in a way, because I never had the real desire. I mean, I never had the goal that I wanted to make movies. I just like to do things. You know, I like to fool people, I guess.
Well, Tim Burton, thanks a lot for talking with us about your movies.
Sure.
Tim Burton's latest film, Edward Scissorhands, recently came out on home video. This is Fresh Air.